Like I remember back even like a couple of years prior to losing my vision, I'd gone to therapy after a breakup, and just because mm-hmm. I didn't handle it well, and that also connects to like a lot of like how I didn't feel very good about myself. Like after a six month yeah. relationship, I was really down on myself, like just for, in not a great way. Mm-hmm. And I guess I yeah. was introduced to therapy around then, but in regards to say the actual vision impairment stuff, like it coming up, I didn't have therapy for that, which is still something I reflect on and go, well, that shows how much you needed therapy for other things. Because if I can handle a vision impairment and be okay with it, as in, and I'm going to work through it, but I had to go see a therapist about a 6 month relationship breakdown, there's a real imbalance of like things there. So I need to work on some things.
To reason with someone is to motivate them to do or accept topics, ideas, and issues through discussion and having conversations.
This podcast is about the relationship with ourself and the relationship with others, finding our stability in our self-worth, and how do we actually be in healthy relationships. We find this out through connection, compassion, and communication. Reach out, connect with me, like, subscribe, comment. I want to unpack whatever it is that we can to really get to the nitty and gritty of finding out how do we get better in ourselves and how do we get better in our relationships. Based on the Mornington Peninsula in Victoria, Jamie experienced an unexpected eye condition in 2010, leading to a 90% loss of eyesight. Despite this, Jamie previously ran a successful business as a tradesman. With a profound interest in psychology, Jamie pursued studies in Bachelor of Psychology and Psych Honours and is now in the final stage of becoming a registered psychologist. Currently, Jamie helps clients overcome self-imposed barriers, release emotional burdens, and reframe past trauma through coaching and therapy. By supporting clients in achieving their goals, Jamie promotes greater fulfillment and happiness in their lives. Keen to talk about whatever we kind of come up with today, and super excited for you all to be here and to talk with the mind tradie. Love that. Let's go.
All right, welcome back to the podcast. I'm really pumped about this one. I have sitting with me Jamie. Thanks for coming in, Jamie.
Pleasure, Jackson. Thanks so much for having me on. Absolute honor.
Yeah, man. I don't even know how I came about you on Instagram. It's generally how I find a lot of my guests. But yeah, when you popped up, I was like, man, this guy's got some great content, and it made me go, I need to up the editing. Yours are all so nice.
Thanks, Ace, man. Look, I get help with that at the moment. So I don't like that quality. I don't know how long it can last because I'm getting someone to help me out at the moment. But yeah, it's definitely kind of giving it a bit of a boost, which is pretty good. So yeah, I've been pretty happy with it. So yeah.
Yeah, I do really enjoy it. It made me up my game a little bit in the new financial year. I was like, put it behind me a little bit. Yeah. So, look, man, let's jump straight in. Who the hell are you and what do you do?
Okay, well, so, yeah, look, I'm Jamie. I guess I'm known by other things as, like, I guess, the mind tradie on social media stuff and even, I guess, my own business. So what I do now is, look, I'm studying in my last part of study, fortunately, to become a psychologist. So I'm provisionally registered as a psychologist now. I guess I've been on this path for, say, the last 10 years nearly. And so I've been studying part-time and working full-time for the past 10 years. But look, prior to that, I went through a bit of a big change in life that was kind of forced upon me. And I don't mean that in a negative way, but it was just, you know, just certain circumstances led me to have a big career change. And what that was when I was 26, I, developed a vision impairment that caused me to have a career change. And prior to that, I was a tradesman on the Mornington Peninsula in Victoria. But yeah, that's what I do. I'm studying to become a psych because that's what I love. I love doing this kind of stuff. I love, mindset change, you know, belief change, you know, self-worth stuff, as we discussed before. I love all that stuff. And I love how childhood stuff that, you know, unforeseen beliefs and negative core beliefs kind of impact people as an adult and helping them change that. I love it so much. So that's what I do now. And I, like I said, so I do. I currently do coaching and therapy on the side while I'm finishing my, I guess, last bit of study, and then I'll be able to do it officially as a psychologist in maybe in a couple of years. But I'm in my last, yeah, last little bit, which is pretty cool. I love that I'm at my last stage.
Yeah. Yeah, mate. It's a long journey, especially doing it part time.
Yeah.
It can definitely be a long haul.
Yeah. But look, I guess I'm one of those people that, like once I've made a decision to do something, like it's, that's it. I'm going to make it happen. Like it has been, you know, there's some highs, some lows, some really tough points, but it's like, I've just made that decision to do it. And I guess I also like, even though it's tough, like you just got to find a way to enjoy it. You know, like find a way to enjoy getting up early to study or whatever it is, doing the long hours at nighttime, whatever it is, find a way to enjoy it. And that's been the best thing for me. So I guess I've gotten good at that.
Yeah. Yeah. So, well, it comes along with that mindset. You're already giving me goosebumps talking about all that core beliefs and self-worth stuff. It's exactly up my alley and definitely a big emphasis that we focus on in this podcast. So that's sick. So what, tradie beforehand, and is that the injury based on an injury at work?
No, it actually it was so I've got this condition. It's a relatively rare condition. So it's called the actual name is called Leber's hereditary optic neuropathy. So an easy way of put that is to basically it means that my optic nerves don't work the same anymore. So back in 2010, around July, September time, around then, within about a 3-month period, I lost about 90% of my vision pretty rapidly, and the condition basically what it means is the body just stops sending blood to your optic nerve the same way it used to. So up until then, I had perfect vision; I could drive a car and all that kind of stuff. It was kind of unexpected. And look, we probably thought it was like a kickboxing injury because I used to fight in the ring kickboxing between like age 23 to 26. So I just thought, oh, maybe it was that originally. And then we found out kind of late 2010, it was more this actual kind of specific condition. It's hereditary, okay. But nobody in my family had it before. So maybe I just lived the life that brought it out. So because it's in the blood. So my brother might have the exact same condition, but certain circumstances or things that I might have done, like smoking when I was younger, drinking drugs when I was younger, all that kind of stuff might have brought it on, but there's just no guarantee. Could have been hard hits to the head. There's just no guarantee because even when I was spending time in Vision Australia, kind of learning new ways to do things back, you know, whatever it was, 13 years ago, there might be like 4 or 5 people in Melbourne with the same kind of condition, and they might have lived a very different life to me, but it's come on in them. So there's just no guarantee.
Yeah.
But so, that's kind of what happened there.
Yeah, okay. And that would have been a massive blow. So I guess the mindset stuff so important and vital in that space. Massive life change.
Yeah,
totally. How'd you go with all that?
Well, look, it was like incredibly tough in a lot of ways. Like obviously, like there was like really some really kind of dark days, but I don't mean dark in like me contemplating ending it or anything like that, because that's just not in my it's not in my personality. I think it's just not in my DNA to think like that. I think there's people that would have the people that have said to me that it was like, oh, I don't, you know, I might have done this or I might have done that, like talking more kind of unfortunately kind of self-harm stuff or, you know, going even worse. And I'm just like, well, that literally never came into my head. And that's not because of a strength thing. Like that doesn't mean that I'm stronger than them or they're weaker than me or anything like that. I just think some people probably have more of a tendency to think like that in tougher times for just because it's a coping mechanism. And I just don't have that coping mechanism. I think fortunately, potentially because like the stuff we were discussing before, potentially because of childhood stuff that I went through, maybe it built a resilience in me to kind of just push through. Because I remember like when I'd kind of like, you know, 1 or 2 months into losing my vision and I'd lost, you know, not about 90%. I remember coming home one day after getting more of a formal diagnosis of what was happening. I remember sitting at home and I was just like crying on the decking at the front of my house. And I'm like, this, like, I'm not going to let this stop me. Like, this is obviously really tough. And it was like, mm-hmm. had to give up my business and couldn't drive a car. And I couldn't fight kickboxing in the ring anymore. But I'm like, this isn't going to stop me. Mm-hmm. Like, I've been through, just so much stuff. Like, as in, like, I've just worked through so much stuff. I don't mean like I've had like a, just, I guess like I've had a pretty lucky life in a lot of ways. Obviously had some pretty tough stuff happen, but it's like, I had an idea of where life was going and or what I want to get out of life and how I want to feel. Yeah. And I'm like, I'm not going to let this stop me being happy. So it was more like in that moment, it was more of an acceptance. I'm going to do whatever I need to do to be happy despite what was happening here. So it was really tough, but I never had the self-harm, suicidal ideation stuff. What I kind of had was like, I had thoughts temporarily, luckily, which were like, oh, who's going to want me now? Because this kind of goes back to self-worth, where my self-worth back then was tied to all these external things. And when they all went, I'm like, I didn't have any. And so that's what it was more, you know, really kind of dark stuff. Who's going to want me? And like, who's going to accept me in this kind of, you know, all this kind of stuff. And I guess that was kind of, that triggered kind of, I guess, these primal kind of fears of acceptance from the group or acceptance from a partner, all that kind of fears like around that. But I worked through that. Yeah. But it was like, I guess my personality, like in those times where it was tough and it was like full on, like, you know, worrying about whether I was going to be able to stay in a rental property because I wasn't getting money and all this kind of stuff. I was like, I did go into a, you know, like depressive state for a long time. But what can happen with me, I can like, say, stay up late at night because I, you know, just like, I don't know, maybe it was the only time I might have had energy. And then I'll sleep during the day or something like that. This was what was happening back then. So I might go to the 24-hour gym that was opened a couple of suburbs away. I'd get on the bike with this crappy light and I would ride two suburbs away and go to the 24-hour gym. But so I was still keeping myself busy there. Like, it's like life didn't have to fully stop. So like while I was trying to figure everything else out, I still kind of had things that would keep me sane. And so like I knew there was some kind of control I could have in this uncertainty. And look, who cares if I was sleeping during the day a lot of the time for months or whatever, and like, you know, wasn't always so kind to myself, or I was worrying about whether people were going to think. Like, I still kind of kept a good level of like exercise. I was relatively eating well, and you know, like, and like I would walk during the day sometimes. I would walk, you know, 10, 20 k's a day just for something to do. So that's kind of how I kind got through those times. But man, also like I'm really stubborn in a way but I don't mean that in a completely negative way. Where what I mean is like I get handed something, but I'm not gonna let it stop me from being happy or it could totally impact my life. Where I'm going to find a way to kind of navigate and adapt to life. And I guess fortunately I've got that mindset to be able to do that. So that really helped me in that time.
Yeah, dude, that mindset is sounds really strong, and I think that for everybody else and so many other people is just like, it is hard to teach. It's and it's hard to master, and it's hard to gain a lot of that to be able to use in your tool belt, I guess, to be able to bounce back and stick with those like non-negotiable things that can get you through. So that's
totally,
mate, power to you to be able to have some of that stuff. So when was the switch? When was the switch between tradie life and I want to fucking go and help some people?
Yeah. Okay. Look. Look. It was a bit of a process because, say, from the end of 2010, like where I decided that I had to give up my business because I couldn't drive anymore. There was a long process of about 18 months or 2 years where I was like, I was applying for jobs like a laborer on a job site or whatever it may be, or even try to work in a supermarket or literally I was trying to just get anything and nothing was coming up. I would go to job interviews and they would say yes. And then like I even had a job, like this company that was like, I was packing like shipping containers doing something or, you know, along those lines. And I had the interview. They're like, yeah, you can start Monday. I told them about the vision impairment. And then like 3 days later, someone rang me and said, so you can't see very well. And I'm like, oh yeah, I can't. And he's like, oh, we can't hire you. And I'm like, back then, if that happened now, that I guess they'd be in a lot of trouble because it's like the unfairness, yeah. I guess. But like there was a lot of stuff like that So there was about 2 years where I was trying to find work, and I would scour through the newspaper or the online, which I hated for so long. It was such a depressing thing. Send your resume off, you get this back, and or whatever. But anyway, it was around 2012, start of 2012 or late 2011, where I decided to start studying, because I'm like, well, I've got to do something. And I, like, I was horrendous in high school, so studying to me was not a thing that I liked doing at all, or didn't think I liked doing at all. And so I started doing a TAFE diploma in like community development, and I did that for 2 years. And then through that, I started working with young people, because someone said, oh, look, I think you'd be pretty good working with young people. I'm like, oh, okay, I'll give it a shot. I'll do some volunteer work. And then I did volunteer work in a youth, I guess, center, like in where I live in the Frankston area of Melbourne. And then after a while, I'm like, yeah, I really like doing this. Did this for like a year or so. I'm like, well, I want to do psychology. I want to take what I'm doing with people into a deeper level. And then, yeah, 2014 started studying psychology. It's gone from there. And then, and I guess I didn't even really know that I wanted to be a psychologist back then. I just knew I wanted to have, like, I wanted to, like, because I was doing, like, motivational speaking and that kind of stuff. I'm like, I just want to build up my knowledge base and with experience of, like, studying that as well. And then it wasn't up until, like, maybe 2018 that I'm like, I actually want to take this a bit further. I want to go all the way. And they, in university, they were like making it out that like for you to get to that stage of like being actually practicing as a psychologist, like how much you've got to do and like how hard you've got to work to like get the marks and all that. And it is true, but honestly, it's not as hard as what they made out. They made out like you've got to get distinctions and high distinctions and average a bloody 85. And that's you know, for some people that maybe have no life experience, that might be the case. But for people that have life experience and all that, like you can get through in some other ways. So that's kind of where I got, and I just realized I love this stuff. Like I loved what I was doing as a tradesman. I absolutely loved it, driving my ute and having my surfboard in the back and working 18-hour days or working 2-hour days, having days off whenever if I needed to. But that was great. But this is kind of where my like life passion purpose kind of sits, and I guess I'm still in my infancy of that, because who knows where it could go. Like, I want to be a psych in private practice, like similar to yourself, like, you know, having your own kind of thing. Who knows where that could go? But that's kind of where I'm heading now. And I absolutely, absolutely love it. Like, I guess this whole process of studying helped me realize that I actually have this like intelligence in other areas that I just never explored. Because in high school, as I said, I was absolutely horrendous. I was one of the worst students in the school and never turned up for my last couple of years. And then getting kind of forced into it through other events kind of led me to realize that I can do pretty well, and I can really narrow down and focus on these things that I love, and you know, get some good results from it. So it's been really cool in a lot of ways.
Yeah, because you don't hear that a lot. You don't hear the I'm definitely stereotyping the shit out of any tradies listening there. I know quite a few that are humble and amazing people, but yeah, I guess the stereotypical thing is tradie becoming a psychologist, not the usual, you know, career swap, I guess.
100%.
So what was that like being tradie in that realm, and I guess living in that? I guess it was your own business and you kind of create the culture, but you know what I'm kind of talking about. What's that shift like? What was that mentality, and then seeing it in the way that it is now? Yeah. How do you go about that shit? What is that like?
Well, I guess that kind of what. Getting into this kind of like even where I'm at now doing the psych stuff and getting accepted into, you know, through APRA, and you know, like you've got to like there's a certain personality you've got to be, and it's like who I used to be would not have been able to do that. But from where things started, like, you know, to where I am now, it's kind of forced me to make a lot of changes in the way that I was always positive. Yes, I was always positive, but I had the tendency to get very angry. I could get very, very angry. I don't mean like have a tantrum and throw, you know, muck up a room or anything like that or break things. It was like, no, I would get angry and I could be like, man, I used to be, when I was younger, I was like, particularly with like kickboxing, that kind of stuff. Like I was a violent person. Like I would never do anything that would like for no reason, but I'll be like, if that person did something to me, like they're disrespecting me, like I'll handle it, I'll do something. That's who I used to be. And that was like the tradie kind of, a lot of the tradie world, that's how it is. And particularly being in the, as I said, in the kickboxing world, I was pretty comfortable in doing that. But like, it's changed me in that way. But it's it forced me to have a look at like why I was so angry, but also the detrimental effects of being okay being angry. Like, I used to enjoy getting angry because I felt so much comfort there. You know, like I had so I had a lot of anxiety and it was triggered by, you know, the core beliefs around, you know, low self-worth and I wasn't worthy of people's attention. No one's going to love me. This was also because of childhood stuff as well. So it kind of forced me to have a look at why am I getting angry? What's actually causing that? And I've been able to kind of transform that now. Now, don't get me wrong, I still get annoyed, but it's nowhere near as what I used to be. I'm sort of like, I'm so much more of a calmer person now. But like, it's sometimes a bit of, bit of anger is healthy, but just not the way I used to be.
Well, you kind of did the work, mate. I guess that's the key, is start reflecting and looking inward and realizing where does my worth come from within rather than external, and what's this anger about, what's this panic and anxiety and coming through in the goods, which is amazing.
And so I guess I guess in regards to like the initial kind of thoughts that came through, probably I didn't realize it was self-worth and wanting to build that, but the initial thoughts kind of came through pretty early on, other than like I need to find a way to be happy. It was like because I was actually originally told that I was going to see nothing, so I was going to see like nothing at all. Luckily, I still have 10%. But like one of the thoughts that came through, or like commonly, was like, well, if for me to be able to handle this, like if I'm only going to really have like my, you know, my feeling and thoughts and that kind of stuff, well, I need to have a good relationship with myself. And so I realized like I was fortunate enough to have the intuition to kind of understand my relationship with myself. Like, I hated myself, but didn't really realize it how much at the time. And so like if I'm going to handle this situation and I kind of, you know, get out what I want out of life and do what I want to do, and just have good relationships with people and all that kind of stuff, I need to improve the relationship with myself. And so that started pretty early on. And I guess I'm really fortunate that that was one of the things that came on. Like, how often would people say that? I guess that's pretty rare, you know, like, so I'm pretty lucky.
Totally. There. Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, that's the ticket for all of us, is when we start to realize and really take that inventory and look within and go, do I like what I see? Do I like what I do? Do I like how I think? Mm. And then what am I willing to do about that?
Mm.
You know, rather than kind of bury it in some of those maladaptive ways of getting through it all, or, you know, continuing along the external path. Mm. So, man, big journey. Yeah. So, I mean, what was the kind of process like? I mean, you did your own work. Like, did you get into therapy? Like, I guess there's never like, it was this day I learned this thing, but it's like, like, what was the kind of process like, how did that all happen?
Good. That's a good question. I guess I don't really talk about that enough. So, I remember back even like a couple of years prior to losing my vision, I'd gone to therapy after a breakup, and just because I didn't handle it well, and that also connects to like a lot of like how I didn't feel very good about myself. Like after a six month relationship, I was really down on myself, like just in not a great way. Mm-hmm. And I was introduced to therapy around then, but in regards to say the actual vision impairment stuff, like it coming, I didn't have therapy for that, which is still something I reflect on and go, well, that shows how much you needed therapy for other things. Because if I can handle a vision impairment and be okay with it, as in, and I'm going to work through it, but I had to go see a therapist about a 6 month relationship breakdown, there's a real imbalance of like things there. So I need to work on some things. But I guess it wasn't till like maybe 2 years after the actual say vision stuff happened, or, you know, I had to give up everything, all that happened. But so I did, therapy was definitely part of it, but the actual things that came up in therapy didn't really have anything to do with say vision loss. It was all how I felt about myself, and kind of the therapists I've had, like over the past 10 years, I've had a couple of psychologists. But one of the main things that came up initially was say like my self-esteem and on all this kind of stuff, and how bad that was at the time. But so therapy was part of it. But the other thing was, like, I started from, like, I guess, the ground up, and I'd like start, like, what can I do? Well, how can I improve things? So there was, I'd been someone who, mm-hmm. prior to losing my vision, I was like self-help books and all this kind of stuff. Even the first two books I ever read as a teenager, because I never read in high school, they were around self-help books. They were like the power, mm-hmm. of power of positivity and how to stop worrying and start living. So I started my journey of self-help and, I guess, working myself, like, back when I was a teenager. But the things I find funny about what I used to do when I didn't really know what to do, but what I mentioned before was, like, I used to go on walks in this time where I wasn't working and I was looking for work. What I would do, I would go for walks, and I came up with a mantra, and the mantra was like, I am worthy, I am good, I am great, whatever it is, because I for some reason knew intuitively that how I felt about myself wasn't to what I knew it could be. And this really kind of got to me, because I felt less than other people, and just not just because of vision, but just because, like, as a human, I felt less than other people. And so I would go on walks, and there'd be like 45 minutes one way, 45 minutes back, and I would say this thing to me over and over, and I would say it kind of either in my head or kind of, like, you know, whisper it to myself. If I could kind of get the idea that someone was walking past, I would stop, and then I would start again. And, like, this realistically, in a lot of ways, like, the affirmations are good, but it's more about the actions that you're doing and all that kind of stuff. But this is all I knew. This is all I knew how to do. So I still find that funny that, like, I didn't know really what to do, but that's pretty significant. Like, us as, like, say, therapists, if we were to say to our clients, go on a walk and for, say, 90 minutes, say this mantra, they'd be like, what? I'm not doing that. So, I still find it funny that I didn't know what I was doing, but I was willing to kind of do anything, because I back then I couldn't read any more self-help books, because, like, obviously couldn't read, and audio books and Audible and all that, my assistive technology to help me read wasn't there back then, but, like, I was doing what I could. And then I guess meditation was also a thing that kind of fortunately came into my life, because I really, really, really needed it. So for most of my life, from, like, almost the age of about 4 or maybe even younger, like, because due to, like, domestic violence and other things that happened, through, like, emotional neglect from step parents and you know, other things that happened, I lived in fight or flight. It was my prominent kind of, you know, my state was in fight or flight. And so relaxation was like people were like, oh, your shoulders are really tense. I'm like, no, they're not. This is how I normally am. So I didn't actually know that I was at like a heightened state. So fortunately, when meditation came in, it helped me begin to start relaxing and just like what effects that had. I had no idea what, like, now compared to what I know now about the nervous system and all that. But it was just this great thing that came in. So I guess the self-help I was doing, the therapy was really good. Meditation was great. It wasn't till probably later, I think it was 2013, I decided that I was doing all this work, but I still wasn't really getting down certain things to kind of, I knew I wasn't really relaxed enough. And I got on, antidepressants, anti-anxiety, the exact same thing. Just because I'm like, I just need something just to help me, because I'm doing all this work, but I'm not really kind of getting down. So I trialed them for a while, and even in the past 10 years or so, I've been on and off them. But that's been good as well, because it's like I've never needed them for like a depressive state or anything like that. But it's more, and like my natural and almost state that I got so used to was anxiety, and then my anxiety transformed into anger, because that's pretty common for a lot of humans, but particularly men, because we're like, well, we'd rather feel, rather than feeling sad and anxious and you know, grief stricken or guilty, we'll go to anger because that makes us feel more powerful. But then I'm just like I've got to do something else here. So the anti-anxiety stuff was, although it was through medication, it helped me realize, I can actually be relaxed. So fortunately, fortunately, like, it's not like I'll rely on them, but it's like, oh, well, it is possible for my body to be relaxed. So they're probably the prominent things, you know, therapy, yeah. self-help, meditation, and some medication at some point when I needed it as well. That's a really long answer, man. I'm sorry if that was too long, but that's kind of the crux of it all, how I help myself.
No. It's really, really good. And I think that's like, you know, just to anyone kind of listening or, you know, even in your platform, like, it's really relatable. Like it is common shit that we all kind of go through, but we don't really kind of ever pause, or it's something brings us to our knees that we end up kind of looking into it and stuff. So, I mean, the mind tradie, what's the intention behind that sort of thing? Because there really is a massive, massive market of men in general that you're tapping into by being a real relatable man. That's sort of, I mean, it's fucking, we're filming this just before the Origin, mate. Like, we're just two blokes talking about mental health and everyone else getting ready to have, you know, watch the footy. And yeah. we're here talking about this. So, you know, yeah. it's a big different thing, right? So yeah. What's the intention behind the mind tradie?
Well,
can you
talk
a bit about that?
Yeah. I guess, I came up with a name, like, I'm like, well, it for some reason just came to me one day, and I'm like, well, that actually kind of rolls off the tongue pretty easy. But it's basically the fact that, like, I'd spent so long being a tradesman, and now, like, it's more that I spend time now, I guess, helping build people's minds and build their beliefs. And, you know, instead of building one thing, I just build something else. So I called my I used to call myself a frameless glass specialist. And now I'm like, just on Insta, I call myself a mind building specialist. So I just like, that's why, because I had that connection there. So yeah, I used to build one thing, and now I help people build other areas of them now. So I just kept the tradie thing.
I love it. I think it's so good. And I mean, maybe I'm getting a bit too meta about it, but like, yeah, I mean, the amount of men that you can kind of, because you're a really relatable dude, you got tats like me, you know, you're speaking in a real authentic kind of voice. You know, like a lot of men need to hear this shit, and a lot of women need to hear that there are men doing this shit, you know, and preaching this and coaching this and being able to help support that.
Totally.
So, yeah, like, where's your kind of reach? Like, what are the, is there a, yeah, I guess a normal clientele that you kind of got going on, or a following that's kind of there that's,
well, it's, yeah, that's a good question, actually. Like, I think my clients are actually around 50-50, which I actually really like.
Okay.
I like that. And I guess even I've noticed even on Insta and TikTok and all that kind of stuff, it's probably slightly gone more in the female way lately. It used to be 50-50, but there's been probably more females at the moment. And, man, I actually really like that. Like I'm happy to go any direction, but like I'm not like I'll go more that way or that way. I guess I see more of the, particularly with the stuff that I love in psychology. Like I love learning about the nervous system and love learning about the brain. I guess like that I see that more on the human level. So if men get more out of it, what I say on this video or whatever it is, or females, they're like I love it. I love it either way. But yeah, I don't have a preference, and it seems to be pretty 50-50 with my clients at the moment, which is, I think, is pretty cool. I love that.
Yeah, it is cool. And the story is really nice. I think that the shift between, you know, just what it means to kind of live that kind of lifestyle and, you know, do that type of work, and obviously the people that you're spending a lot of time with compared to, yeah, I guess the kind of people that you're spending a lot of time with now. Do you notice like you said, there's a bit of a key difference in who you had to become to be able to step into this work. But yeah, do you how that mentality shift in it? What are some of like the key things that you've seen that have shifted that allow you to kind of do this work?
Yeah, I guess I noticed like with the people that I guess spend more time with, or like I've become like better friends with, or even just like connecting with people like yourself, like, you know, that would never have happened.
Yeah.
I would never have thought of doing that, because, you know, I'm sure you'd be the same. You connect with people from all around the world and you have these like deep, cool conversations about this kind of stuff. Like that would never have happened back, you know, 10 years ago, or, you know, prior to it happening. So I guess it's more about that I've like, It's also helped me, I guess, connect to more of a, I don't even know what you would say, but I guess more of a compassionate side to people and to myself and that kind of stuff. But having just cool conversations with people about, say, you know, trauma, core beliefs, all that kind of stuff, which I regularly are because it's my passion, is like, I love that. Like, this is, it's a really cool thing to do. Like, even though I'm learning about it all the time, but like, we could talk about it forever. But I guess, yeah, I've got a different groups of friends and I guess where I work and that kind of stuff. It's, I have noticed that as a big difference. It's been a big shift there. And just, connecting with people online or the people I spend most of my time with, you know, in my own life has been a big change. But man, it's been really cool.
Yeah. It is really cool. And I guess for someone that's sort of been in that industry and you know, there's many other industries that are kind of similar, where predominantly male, predominantly, you know, I guess that real hectic masculinity can be a big part of it. What do you think, like, how do you think that's changing? Or do you think that it is changing? Or what do you think needs to kind of happen in that space? Because, you know, there's a lot of men out there that are really, really angry, like you say. So,
Great question.
What are your thoughts on that, Jamie?
That's a really good question, and it's I guess it comes up a lot in what I think, because I guess maybe I'm fortunate that I don't know, because it comes up a lot on socials or whatever, like about, say, masculine, feminine energy or whatever it is, like depending on how you look at it. It's like I'm probably fortunate for some reason, for whatever reason. Maybe I grew up with a single mother, and that's why. I'm okay speaking more about thoughts, feelings, and whatever it is. But then I've also got the other side where I can be really, you know, I don't mean masculine in a, like a ego kind of alpha way, but it's more about just like, you know, like getting, you know, focusing on this and getting the job done. But then, yeah, I've got the other side, and, you know, for me to do like what we're doing, you know, here or even with our clients, like, you need to be able to connect with like someone on a level which is like really empathetic and compassionate. And that's not necessarily your traditional masculine kind of thing. And so, like, I guess I feel fortunate about that I've been able to kind of have that, or maybe I always had it, so it's helped me bring it out. But I guess to answer your question about the change. So there is definitely a change that is happening. And I think maybe the change started to happen with, say, more of the, I guess, female population a little while ago, where they started to become more independent and, you know, more career driven and that kind of stuff, say, like a while ago. And I think men are in that transition phase where we're like, well, if we're not needed in the same way anymore, like we used to, like, you know, the breadwinner and, you know, you're the one that goes to work and the mum, you know, the mum stays home generally, you know, like how it used to be for a long time. I think where men are in this transition phase But while that happens, they might feel a bit lost. They feel a little bit lost. But I think what's so cool is that I think rather than going, okay, we're not needed in that way, the same way we used to, so we just, like, you know, we'll just kind of live with it. It's more like, well, okay, what can we do? How can we still feel strong and masculine and powerful in that way, but obviously in a healthy way? But let's adapt. You know, like, If a new kind of strong man, or even alpha man, like alpha probably used to be, like, you know, someone who used to, you know, be violent or whatever it is, you know, traditional kind of that kind of in it, particularly in the trading world. But what if the new kind of, I guess, male or masculine, you know, kind of thing was someone who can understand or get at least try to get out and understand their feelings of why they're getting angry? How can they kind of get the most out of themselves and therefore get the most out of their life by understanding their feelings, understanding their emotions and core beliefs or whatever it may be, and rather than sticking their head in the sand? Because I think that the traditionally for a long time was, say, you know, males or whatever, you know, masculine kind of stuff was, well, we'll just get along with it. We'll just get on with it. We'll just do what we're supposed to do. But that means we're leaving things behind. We're kind of pushing things down to get the job done, and then they burst, or they, you know, they'll come to the surface even though we don't want them to.
Yeah.
So I think the new kind of you know, I guess, you know, male or masculine kind of stuff is going to be that, in that they're going to be someone. It's going to be someone who has kind of a good mixture of both, and that it's okay to feel feelings. Because if you can feel feelings, understand them, hopefully if you can, and understand that it's okay to have, say, even crying, Crying is such a necessary and important thing that everyone can do, and you get so much benefit in it when you need to. And that, like, you know, understanding this kind of stuff and, I guess, trying to change the stigma on that kind of stuff. Like, imagine, like, someone that's, rather than someone that's, like, trying to push these things down, I'm okay, but not really being okay. Or on the other side is, I'm not okay, but I can't do anything about it. I think there's somewhere in the middle where it's like, I'm not that good, but maybe I need to understand why that is, or, you know, I'm not feeling well, but I understand that it's, you know, it's not going to last forever, or maybe I need to go to therapy or speak to a coach or counselor or whatever it is. I honestly think that's going to be the transition, or that's what we're in now.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that answer. Cause I think there's that sort of sounds like you're touching on, like, the new strength is being able to step in and be reflective and observe a little bit more, and then choose to be a bit more vulnerable about it all.
Totally.
And using that as the strength and really stepping into that part of us, in that how much we can give back based on when we're self-reflective and when we're kind of choosing to be vulnerable and staying with shit rather than pushing it all away or naming it in the moment.
Yep.
Yeah.
And why I love that's such an important thing, because it's like it's not just so men can kind of get in touch with their feelings, or females, or whatever, whoever's doing it, doesn't matter who's doing it. Someone is basically understanding if they're not feeling that good, whether they're like really heightened and anxious and angry or whatever it is, or they're really down. Why it's important to kind of understand that is not just on the like the feelings level, but it's like, if we're constantly in fight or flight, we're not using the part of our brain where we'll have rational thinking, problem solving, the best ideas. So it's like, if we can understand our feelings and work through them and kind of calm ourselves however we need to, and kind of being in like more of an optimal state, well, we're quite literally using the best of ourselves, and therefore we'll get the best, we'll create the best, we'll like, so it's like a new advancement in our society that I can see happening. That's like, that's why it's so important. And that's also on a personal level why after a while why I realized, well, I don't want to get angry anymore, because if I'm angry, I'm not as smart as what I can be, I'm not as creative as what I could be, even though I used to feel comfortable being angry. You know, like when I, so for example, now, like if I have something happening and I've got something that's bugging me, why am I feeling like this? Or, you know, why does this annoy me? I'm like, rather than trying to just figure it out like that, if now I could be like, well, just meditate on it, calm yourself down. And this is where the best solutions are going to come eventually. And it doesn't mean that I'm going to sit for 10 minutes and meditate, I'm going to have an answer, but it might be that, you know, so I'm calming myself. And then the next day, the day after, it might just randomly through the thumb, like, that's it. That's what I probably need to do. But if I'm just angry, or you know, if I'm just, you know, like pushing things to the side or pushing it down, I'm not getting the most out of myself.
Yeah, and it's going to create that impulsive, reactive part of ourselves that really, you know, never really gives us good results at the end of the day.
Totally.
Yeah, I think that, you know, that point is so important, because, you know, life is so busy, and, you know, a lot of work, whether it be men or women in their roles, is like, you know, we're pushing long hours and we're doing a lot to provide and, you know, work with the cost of living and how we're kind of trying to just, like, you know, survive in this world, but we need to slow down, and we need a lot of help to see that we need to slow down, because we're going to actually get more optimal. I'm sort of saying to my clients a lot recently, the most productive thing you can do at the moment is actually slowing down, where you don't feel productive, but actually so productive. Of exactly what you're saying.
Totally.
And that, you know, I think a lot of men in particular that are, you know, in that you know, mindset or you know, heaviness or providing or whatever that kind of is in those roles where the demand is there. Not all of us, and obviously some women fit in that category. Most women fit in that category. It's, I guess it is collective, but it's we all need help to be able to figure out, like, meditation or slowing down or taking these breaks and pauses is actually going to make you more optimal, because you're slowing down enough to calm yourself and regulate that nervous system.
Totally, yeah. And it's possible to for both men and women, or like whoever, to be able to get support, whether it be doing your own self-help or feeling feelings or whatever you've got to do, see a therapist, coach, counselor, psychologist, whatever, it is possible to do that and feel strong at the same time. So understanding yeah. feelings and feeling doesn't have to be attributed with feeling weak. I think where there's a lot of particularly men, and you know, that's just I guess stereotype there, but it's like a lot of men kind of attribute being vulnerable with quite literally being weak. But if okay, you're opening yeah. yourself up to feeling certain things, and therefore there is like a weakening of certain things, but that doesn't mean you're weak, and it doesn't mean it's going to last. And therefore, if you can go through a bit of a period where you're feeling, I don't know, like maybe you've got to drop your guard a little bit, so you're not as angry, you feel this, you've got to work through this and speak vulnerably with a counselor or friend or whoever, it leads to then feeling stronger and you can feel strong again. And I think that's a pretty cool thing that we can kind of get the message out on as well. Like it's, you know, vulnerability can then lead to feeling stronger later.
Yeah, I think it's one of the strongest things we do because it's not easy and it's not
totally
comfortable for a lot of people. So sitting in that space can really help.
Yeah, but then also that's the thing. So if people, like what if the feeling strong used to be, you know, doing kind of maybe say more negative behaviors, but what if the new version of doing that was pushing through these feelings? And by pushing through these feelings, understand what if that would help? You know, that's kind of my idea or ideal. So we'll see how that goes. But particularly when I'm working with men, that's kind of what I help them do as well. Like that's a new kind of strong or a new ownership of yourself. Like maybe that's the new kind of alpha feeling.
Yeah, well, it's transferable skills, right? I think that you're a testament to that, Jamie, in the way that you're able to kind of shift your mindset into being able to work hard with the things that you needed to work hard on. Then you get smacked in the face with like, holy shit, I've got to look within.
Yeah.
It just became part of the process, right? Same process. I want to finish this degree. I want to finish this work. I want to do this work. To do that, I've also got to look hard at myself, look hard at the way that my feelings are. And I think that that's the combination that we kind of need. It's like, look at this transferable skill that we can do to perform and to work hard and to do all these things. Put the same amount of effort into, you know, effortlessness feeling and slowing ourselves down. That's going to make the perfect little human, right?
Yeah, that's perfectly said, mate. Yeah, 100% agree. That's totally, yeah, that's what I'm thinking. That's a really good way to put it.
Yeah, and I love that's what you're kind of doing. And I love the mind trader, you know, you're getting all the tools to help people with their mind. I think that's awesome. It's really, really, really cool.
Thanks,
mate. Look, mate, we could fucking talk all day. It's so good. All night.
Absolutely.
but we better slow things down, wrap things up. And make sure we can do what we need to do for ourselves to get back onto it and do it all again tomorrow. So, I mean, we talked about the mind trading. Where can people find you? And, you know, what's on for you at the moment? Is there anything that, people can kind of know and find you in?
I guess socials. So I'm on Instagram, the mind trading. You'll find my website there. Otherwise, website is just themindtrading.com. I guess TikTok and all that kind of stuff as well. But if you want to message me there, you can email me as well. That's where people can find me. I guess I've slowed down a little bit this year on certain things because, I mean, study's pretty hectic and I just want to make sure I get it well. But I'm still doing, still doing videos, still having contact with people. But it's like I used to have these big things, like I was really going nuts with my podcast the last couple of years, but I've got a bit of a break with that at the moment. But I'm more just going to putting videos out, getting my study done, having fun with it and being a dad, being a husband and all that kind of stuff as well. So I'm just kind of enjoying that as much as I can.
Love that. And that's a whole nother podcast I'll have to get you on for is the role of a dad and being a partner.
Yeah.
But we'll dive into next time, Jamie. It's been an absolute honor having you on here, man. And keen to keep connecting and staying in touch.
Yeah, unreal. Man, like I can tell you and I have got a very good connection, and the stuff we would talk about we're going for hours and hours and hours. So I'd love to be able to chat with you more whenever we can. So it's great to be able to connect with, like, particularly another guy, because obviously you'll speak to a lot of females, like, in the psychology field particularly, there's like 80% females. So just to connect with another guy, particularly with your knowledge and passion as well, man, I love it. So yeah, thanks for having me on here too.
I appreciate that, man. All right. Well, take care. We'll talk soon.
All right. Thanks, man.
If you want to find out more about how therapy can help you kick some goals, go check out findreasontherapy.com.au or the Find Reason Therapy Instagram page.